Chaucer as a representative and the chronicler of his age. Well does Crampton Rickett observe, inverted comma, Chaucer symbolizes as no other writer does the Middle Age. He stands in much the same relation to the life of his time as Pope does to earlier phases of the 18th century and the Tennyson to the Victorian era, and his place in English literature is even more important than theirs. Inverted comma close. Now that is the character of the relation which Pope and Tennyson have with their respective age. It is a truism of literary criticism that of all writers, these two are the perfect exponent and representative of their respective ages. Their importance is twofold. First, their views and philosophy of life are more or less characteristics of their respective age. Second, their works build up a picture of their contemporary life. These two points are more tenable in the case of Chaucer than either Pope or Tennyson. Pope. So far as religious belief is concerned, Pope was not a representative of his age. He was a Roman Catholic, whereas the majority of Englishmen were Protestant with a fair sprinkling of Puritan among them. However, Pope never asserted his religion anywhere in his work. His composition among themselves build up a fairly authentic picture of social, literary and intellectual life of the literary 18th century, which he dominated so effectively. His chief work normally works namely the Essay on Criticism, the Essay on Man, the Rape of the Lock, and the Denunciate are imbued by the spirit of the age. The Essay on Criticism is a body of critical principle borrowed from Herrock and Boileau, Boileau, which were recognized as infallible in his age, set forth in memorable verse. The Essay on Man is likewise an attempt to present the philosophical and intellectual principle of the time. Much of what Pope gives is borrowed from others, which makes his work all the more representative of the age. In The Rape of the Lock, the satirically portrayed the frivolous pursuit and affected life of the upper class ladies of his age in the person and the activities of Belinda. As a critic says, noted comma, the artificial tone of the age, the frivolous aspect of femininity in nowhere more exquisitely pictured than in The Rape of the Lock. Apart from Pope indulgence in personality, the Denunciate, as John Butt emphasized in the satire on the failing standard of literature, its picture how two literary scenes in the age of Pope was crowded with hawks who were denizens of the ill-formed curved street. Tennyson. Lord Tennyson was a representative of early Victorian era, as Pope was the early 18th century. It stands to reason Crampton Rickett perhaps assumes it does not whether Tennyson as a poet was greater than borrowing the Matthew Arnold, who were is a well-known contemporaries. Modern critical opinion is inclined to place borrowing and even Arnold above Tennyson, but whether or not Tennyson was greater than Browning and Arnold. Sorry for the mistake of Browning and Arnold. It is indisputable that he was much more representative of his age than they. Let us quote a critic. Noted comma, it is doubtful whether any other writer of that century, the 19th, they reflected too clearly and broadly in his verse or prose of characteristics of that period, the dreams and aspiration. the conflict and the disappointments, the aesthetics, ideals and scientific discoveries, its doubts in religion and its dogmatism in private life, its social enthusiasm and zeal for education, its curious learning and its ethical earnestness, its enthusiasm for peace and commerce, and its ardour, A-R-D-O-U-R, for military conquest and imperialism may all be found mirrored in Tennyson's poetry. Let us consider some of his major work was regards their representative value. In Locksley Hall of 1842, Tennyson effectively present the optimistic belief of the age in the idea of progress and potential of science in ascertaining in a brilliant future. In the place of art, the concern himself with the burning question of the day, whether art was for the sake of art of life. He rejected the philosophy of new aestheticism, which glorified the worship of beauty at the cost of even morality. As for Maud, it gives, as a critic observed, a dramatic rendering of the revolt of a cultured mind against the hypocrisy and corruption of a society degraded by the worship of mammons. In his Ideals of the King, as Sir Ivor Evans observed, Tennyson has reduced the plan of the Arthurian stories of the necessities of Victorian morality. In Memoriam, which is perhaps Tennyson's noblest work that for its overt purpose of lamentation of the early demise, D-E-M-I-S-E, of his dear friend Arthur Hallam. But there is more of Tennyson than Hallam in the poem, as a poetic statement of the religious doubt of the time is exercised a powerful hold over Tennyson's generation. In The Princess, he associated himself with the suffragist movement of his time and made a plea for education and better placement of women in society. All this shows, to quote G. H. Mayer, M-A-I-R, that Tennyson represents more fully than any other poet this essential spirit of the age. The next topic, Chaucer's importance. What Pope and Tennyson were to do for their respective ages, Chaucer did for his own. Chaucer hated insularism. All his life he was in the thick of man and affair. He lived in no ivory, I-V-O-R-Y, tower of his own. He saw much of life. He was well acquainted with all classes and conditions of men. He also travelled abroad. All this trained him for a poet of men, as appeared eventually in Saintsbury Tales. His earlier works are two bookish, being modelled upon Italian and French works. But in Saintsbury Tales, he fixed up the spirit of his age for future generations to observe and appreciate. He was as truly an unofficial chronicler of England in the 14th century as Froissart was the official French chronicler of the military events of the same time. Other poets of the same age reveals it in a few of its many aspects. It is the singular achievement of Chaucer that he captured his age almost in its totality, more effectively than even Pope and Tennyson did there. Comparing him with his contemporaries, Lewes remarks, "All the writers of this time reveal some aspect of contemporary life and the prevailing feeling and thought. The author of Paul shows us the mysticism and refined mind. In Langland, the anger which was reiterating the abuse to, of government and the vices of clergy. Wycliffe, an ardour for religious reform which already might amount to Protestantism, Jowar and the fewer aroused in the wealthier class by the peasant rising. Barber or the break between the literature of Scotland and the England and the advent of patriotic Scottish poetry, each had his own plan, his dominant and one the whole narrow passion or character which was local of local and of his time. His Chaucer's work reflects his century not in fragment but completely. Two limitations. Chaucer's work has almost a documentary value for however desire to reconstruct the actual life of 14th century England. But there are two major limitations to Chaucer's work as a delineator of contemporary life and manner. First, Chaucer is almost silent, but the very stirring the historic events of his age, such as A. the Anglo-French conflict, commonly known collectively as the Hundred Years' War, which began in 1338. B. the Black Death of the terrible plague of 1834 to 1849, the Peasant Revolt of 1348 to 1849, the Peasant Revolt of the 1381, the Lollard movement started by John Wycliffe in 1377 for the reformation of the church, the struggle of the House of Lancaster against Richard II, ending in the deposition of succession by Henry IV in 1399. Chaucer does the course casually refer to some of these events, but there is no full-length treatment of any of them. The Peasant Revolt is referred to in Annan's Press Tales. The Battles of Crecy and Poitiers are glanced at the elsewhere. The allusion to the Black Death comes in Chaucer's character sketch of the Doctor of Physics in the prologue to the Saintsbury Tales. He kept that he won in pestilence. There is then a latent reference to Lollardism in the delineation of the poor parson who liked a Lollard in bracket one of Wycliffe's disciples we lived in simple living and high thinking. But all these references are inexpressive, being almost casual. All this makes William Vaughan, Vaughan, Moody assert, the peasant rebellion and the Lollard agitation give us glimpse of an England with Chaucer. In spite of the many sidedness of his work did not reveal. The Saintsbury Tales contains few references to the plague, only one to the peasant uprising, and only one to Lollardy, and these references are casual or jesting. Chaucer wrote for court and cultivated classes to whom the suffering of the poor were a matter of utmost indifference. It is indeed true that Chaucer, like Shakespeare, had a rather undemocratic distrust of the proletariat and especially the mob. His avoidance of the treatment of the popular movement of the time has, however, another reason too. Let us quote there Muriel Bowden, Bowden's words. The most important reason for Chaucer's silence about political affair and national event undoubtedly lies in very nature of his genius. The poet's magnificent human comedy is the more human. It is drenched in life, as John Livingstone Laws, L-O-W-E-S, has said, in that it is without the immediate and is concerned with the universal and the timeless. Note, comma, close. Herein lies the crux of the matter before impeaching Chaucer for his neglect of the important events of his age. We must understand the difference between the poet and the historian, whereas the latter is concerned with the events and the moment which can be dated. The former deal with the dateless and universal aspect of human nature, which lies at the core of these events and moments. Chaucer was no topical versifier. If he were like a chronicler to versify the events and the movements, however important to this time, he would better have been forgotten by us. What we read, the Sainsbury tells, for is the authentic and panoramic vision. It gives us the social life of the age of Chaucer, not for an account of the topical event which happened to befall in that age. Second thing, the second limitation of Chaucer in portraying his age is, if viewed differently, a positive asset. It is his avoidance of literalism, bracket exact and unimaginative rendering of reality, bracket close. Chaucer's is no Kodak camera realism. What he gives us in the Sainsbury Tales is, of course, very much near reality, though it is not perfect reality. There is some exaggeration here and some extenuation there. For instance, there is an obvious element of idealism in his characterization of the knight. The plowman, P-L-O-W-M-A-N, and the poor parson, these characters are too good to be literally possible and naturally enough. They are exempted from those naughty strokes of irony which we find leveled against all their fellow pilgrims. They are, according to David Dessay, nostalgic portraits of the people who were non-existent but who were desired by Chaucer to exist. For the rest, however, Chaucer record as he find not melancholy, melancholy. However, M-E-C-H-A-N-I-C-L-L-Y. However, but with the additional advantage of his fresh and sly commentary, of which his irony is the soul of the spice. In a word, though Chaucer is a realist, yet he is not a literal transcriber of reality.